Thank you. I've been asked to talk about labour markets in London, and to relate that back to White City, where of course the labour market in London is going to be a rather bigger topic than just to talk about White City. So I'm going to start with the bigger picture, and then perhaps try and tie it back to the White City project at the end of my presentation. But I'd like to start by referring back, I think, to some of the discussion that was happening before we had the lunch break, because I think one of the things that I'm talking about here is introducing, if you like, some new concepts into the debate, at least as far as I've heard it so far, particularly the concepts of markets and the concept of competition. One of the things that I thought was quite interesting in the discussion that we had before lunch was that we were talking, and Richard introduced this idea of conflict. And indeed, London is built on conflict. We have two cities in London, the City of Westminster and the City of London. Why do they both exist? Because a monarch fell out with the burghers of the City of London. The whole thing has been built around the need to resolve those sorts of conflicts. And that's been going on for a very long time. If we can turn conflict into competition, generally that's actually stood us in good stead. The Wars of the Roses are still being fought on the rugby league playing fields between Lancashire and Yorkshire, or indeed on the cricket field for that matter as well, and other wars that have maybe changed into sporting competition or economic competition enable us to explore the potential for development in ways which can be positive for us all. Indeed, if we think about the prosperity that we've managed to generate in the last couple of hundred years, it's through the operation of markets and the ability of markets to explore the potential for an economy, for innovation, for development, and for things to change. So what I want to do is to say a little bit about how London has been changing and our ability to respond to those. And if you go to the... I'm going to talk about a number of different things. I'm going to talk about how employment has been changing. The other thing I want to talk about a lot is jobs, because jobs, work of one description or another, is what generates the incomes which allow us to pay for these things. How that's been changing, a little bit about the gender balance in all of that, and then something about the geography part, which will bring us back down to the White City issue. But let's start by looking at the job picture overall. So for one of the things that's happened is that we saw a period, this looks from, there's probably those numbers look pretty dim at the back, is that right? Yes. This goes from 1971 to the most recent data we've got, 2004. So from the 70s through to the early 90s, employment in London, as indeed in a number of major cities, was pretty much on a downward trend. You know, a little bit up, a little bit down, but fundamentally downward. That bottomed out in the recession of the early 90s. And since then, that trend has been on the reverse slope. Had a bit of a dip in the last couple of years. The end of the dot-com boom presented a considerable challenge to London. But we're coming out the other side of that. And that projection is, and the numbers have begun to recover. So finally, we're getting back towards the sort of levels of employment which were last seen 30 years ago. That's a tremendous change and a tremendous difference in what's been going on. We're projecting that growth continues, and the reason for that is actually pretty straightforward. If we have the next picture, please, which is the changing structure of employment in London. And this, again, I think, is certainly a feature of many, not a feature of Shanghai, but it's a feature in particular, if you like, the post-industrial societies and the post-industrial economies. The picture here has got two big things going on. One of these is the decline in manufacturing. So in the 70s, there were over 1 million people employed in manufacturing in London. Now there are about a couple of hundred thousand or getting towards that way, and we're expecting it to continue. I mean, that's a kind of such a well-established trend that although the numbers of jobs going out of manufacturing are likely to decline, that's only because there aren't that many left. And what there is pretty highly specialised stuff, high-tech or low-run production of clothing, for example, for designers, high-tech prototype manufacturing, that kind of thing. Certainly clean manufacturing, not much large-scale stuff left, a little bit down in the eastern area. So this is just generally sort of slowly fading away, but not that much. The other big part of the story is business services. Business services is, of course, a bit of a portmanteau. Manufacturing is a bit of a portmanteau term, for that matter. So too is business services. It's lawyers, it's accountants, it's management consultants, it's economists, people like me, it's software people, it's advertising agencies, it also includes temporary workers and people working for agencies of all descriptions, whatever they're doing. All of that has been on a solid upward trend, really since the 70s, a bit slow during the 70s, beginning to take off in the early 80s, and really just continuing to go on through. So the change round in London's performance hasn't come because the growth pattern has changed. It's changed because the decline pattern changed. So in other words, that shift in the early 90s comes about when the decline in manufacturing has slowed down, those jobs have gone, and the growth ones are still going through. So what we have is that continuing trend. Ricky introduced me by saying I work with John. John and I have had arguments about this because I'm actually fairly cautious. I'm a very cautious person by nature. And so if I allowed this trend simply to persist forever, I end up with everybody working in business services, and I don't think that's very plausible. So I keep trying to sort of push it back down a bit, and he says I'm being too cautious, but there you go. The other thing that's happening here that's interesting is we've got here the hotels and restaurants line and the other services line. Other services is a lot of the personal service, a lot of the creative stuff, if you like, but creative media people and so on, they all got stuck in other services. So this is part of the story that, if you like, these are the new things beginning to come through, the new growth areas, new personal services, the new stuff which you can only do on a face-to-face basis, which has been driving and is likely to continue to drive the growth as we go through into the future. So there's quite a big story here about how London has reinvented itself, if you like, over the last 30 years, changed entirely the kind of the big picture structure of its employment. If we want to say that London is going to suddenly collapse, then we have to say business services are going to collapse. I mean, that's, if you like, would be a very big economic story, not just for London, but for the UK and indeed the world. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that's going to happen because I think the process of globalization that we've already been talking about is likely to continue, and that drives these sorts of services. We can argue, you know, obviously, about the detail of the numbers and the exact scale, but I think this general story, to me at any rate, is pretty strongly established. What does that actually mean? Yes, thank you very much. Cheers. One of the things it's also meant is a change in structure of the kind of people who are employed. I mean, the traditional manufacturing plant, large scale, lots of jobs for a particular kind of skill, very often very male-oriented. We've had a complete turnaround in the sorts of and other sorts of patterns as well. Go to the next. So here is what's been happening to the gender balance. And you can see, again, much as business services employment has been going on growing, so women's employment also has pretty much been on a solid upward trend. This chart, unfortunately, only goes back to 1982. Difficulties on the databases before that. You can see the downturn that we've been experiencing. You can see that the women's part of employment has actually stabilised more rapidly than the male part of employment. And you can see how, although there's a gap here, that gap has actually been pretty constant over the last decade or so. Widened a little bit in the peak of the dot-com boom, but has gone away again since then. One of the features, however, that's important in London is that the proportion of part-time work is very much lower than it is in the rest of the country. I suspect that's... I can't actually show this very easily because of the way the statistics are presented, but I suspect that's an urban feature. In other words, you wouldn't come into central London to do a part-time job. It's too hassly, takes too long, costs too much. And so part-time work is the sort of work that you do in your local area and close to your home, whether you're a man or a woman, though obviously most part-time workers are women. whereas the full-time jobs are the ones which are going to be higher paid and which will encourage you to travel more. And we can certainly see that in London. That actually generates issues, I think, as we go forward in how we continue to provide the right kind of employment mix and indeed the right kind of opportunities for women. That's slightly that's an important topic and one which we're debating a lot, and I think is going to be very relevant, particularly when we look at the geography that we've got. This is a map of where London's jobs are. It goes from hot to cold, as you'd expect. So the red bit is where most people is where the biggest proportion of employment are. So we've got, this is the central area here. The White City project, Ricky and I agree, is about on the edge of the red bit here. This is Docklands and Canary Wharf. This is Croydon, which was a very big source of office employment in the 60s. A lot of, it was a policy, essentially. Policy decided that we would build lots of big office blocks there. Recently, they've been going nowhere because it's not really got enough of the central characteristics to keep it going. And that there is Heathrow, which has employment, has a lot of employment for reasons I needn't really explain to anybody here. This is obviously the challenge area, if you like. It's a kind of where there are relatively few jobs. These sort of generally, I don't know what we'd call them, greeny-brown areas down here, up on the north, and indeed to some extent in this area, are areas where, if you like, the jobs are local jobs, because these are also areas where lots of people live. And one of the things that we've been particularly trying to work on is the distinction between city jobs, broadly speaking, jobs generated by the fact this is a global city, global investment, and jobs generated by where people live and the intensity of, and the need to support the activities of where people live. And of course, that brings us straightforwardly to the commuting question. This is perhaps... Well, at the back, it's completely impossible, but all we need to really to do is think here is we've got the top level, boroughs which are generally the inner city boroughs, where lots of people come into those boroughs and lots of people also leave those boroughs in order to work. The dark blue bars are the proportion of the people who work in that borough who actually live outside it, and the light blue is the proportion of the people who live in that borough but work outside it. And these boroughs, Croydon, again, Bromley, Havering, these are all out of, these are the ones right on the edge of London. So the ones at the bottom are the ones which, on the whole, tend to be a bit more self-contained. And of course, we've got. Hammersmith and Fulham is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 down. White City is in the borough of Hammersmith and Fulham, pretty much in the middle of it, actually, I would guess, or perhaps a little bit to the. But on the east-west axis, it would be pretty much in the middle. So it's one of those. It is definitely in that sort of that fluid bit, the bit which is attracting the higher densities and the higher intensity. And I don't think we should necessarily expect. We're not going to expect that all parts of London will end up with the same high-density activities. That must be in a limited number of places. So here we've got the one of the sort of backgrounds to what is driving a commuting pattern, where you bring large numbers of people in to a fairly limited number of places, and you have equally large numbers, but much more diffuse and dispersed. So you've got people who are doing what we might call local jobs. Local jobs cover a variety of things. That's not just the services which are associated with residential activity, not just the estate agents, not just the teachers, not just the doctors. It might also be those people who've put their office near where their home is because they have the luxury of doing that. The office for my my consultancy company is halfway between where I live and my partner lives. It's in West London, well beyond White City as it happens. But that's the privilege, if you like, of having to doing something near where you live. Of course, I then end up here most of the time, which is quite a long way away, but there you go. That is the benefit of a world city, in fact. And in some ways, it's that in microcosm, that I can have one office in West London and still be able to access that high quality, high productivity, high energy, high intensity part of the city as well. And that's the kind of the crucial mix, if you like. That high energy, high intensity generates the high productivity and generates the output, which also pays for the investment that's necessary to support that. The word Crossrail keeps being mentioned. That's what ought to pay, that's what would generate the tax revenues which we could give back to the government, which would pay for Crossrail. But there you go. We'll see if the government agrees with this in principle, but keeps saying they have no money. And finally, we must also remember that, as a number of people have been saying, you've also got to do the inclusion. The inclusion aspects of this are very important. And although you've got that high density, highly productive part, there are also the parts which are an issue. Sorry, can we have the last slide? These are employment rates. So this compares London with the rest of the UK. It's the proportion of the population of working age that is actually working. As you can see, it's been rising through the 90s in Great Britain here, and it's pretty much stabilised since the turn of the century. But in London, A, it's lower, and B, it's been declining. So there's a challenge here. We have rising population and rising numbers of jobs, but it's not enough if we're going to actually enable everybody to share in the opportunities that are being given. Thank you.